Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Kelly Jean Kelly, John Russell, Jill Robbins, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Japan said Thursday it has given an export permit for a shipment of materials headed for the South Korean semiconductor industry. The Japanese government hopes the approval will show that the country is not banning exports to South Korea because of a historical dispute between the sides. Trade Minister Hiroshi Seiko announced the approval, saying that officials decided the shipment did not raise security concerns. The process of approving export permits is not arbitrary, Seiko told reporters. The step we took recently is not an export ban. Last month, Japan placed export controls on three important materials used by South Korea's semiconductor industry. South Korea considers the export controls an attack on the country's most important industry. In addition, Japan's cabinet decided to remove South Korea from a list of countries that have preferred trade status. The products of nations that have preferred trade status move easily across borders. The decision became official Wednesday when the government published it. The measure will take effect on August 28th. A Japanese government spokesman denied Wednesday that the trade decisions were a retaliatory move. The two countries are arguing over South Korean court rulings that order Japanese companies to pay money to Korean laborers forced to work during World War II. Japan colonized the Korean Peninsula from 1910 to 1945. The country says that a 1965 agreement, which normalized relations between the two countries, settled any money issues. Japan's chief cabinet secretary, Yoshihide Suga, said Wednesday that the measures are related to Japan's national security concerns. He denied that the move was in answer to Japan's anger over the court rulings. He called the measures necessary from a national security point of view. Suga also said it was not intended to affect Japan-South Korea relations. Japanese officials have said that South Korea's export control system and operation is not of the highest possible quality. Because of this, they say, the country can no longer have preferred trade status. Suga said the measure puts South Korea back to normal status. It's not an export ban, he added. Japanese officials have denied South Korea's charge that they are using trade to answer the court rulings. But many South Koreans do not believe Japan is being truthful. Japan also says South Korea violated international law by trying to force Japanese companies to compensate beyond the 1965 agreement. Japan provided $500 million in loans and aid under that deal. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe was recently asked about the possibility of meeting South Korean President Moon Jae-in at upcoming international events. He said the main cause of the problem between the two countries is the wartime compensation issue. Observers say the conflict is preventing the two nations from cooperating on security issues. These include efforts to get North Korea to end its nuclear weapons program. Some critics also say the dispute is damaging Japan's image as an economic leader in Asia. I'm Susan Shand.
Estrella was in the sixth grade when her boyfriend, Andrine, said with the urgency of young love that they should spend the rest of their lives together. "I was unsure because of my studies," Estrella told VOA. "But since I love him so much, well, yes, I said yes. I knew I wanted to be with him." Their parents objected to the idea immediately. But on August 25, 2018, Estrella Belén Estrada Rodríguez married Andrine González Melchor. The couple settled at his family's small farm in the poor southern state of Chiapas, Mexico. She was 13. He was 15. "God willing, my daughter will be all right," said Estrella's mother, Maria Eugenia Rodriguez Valbuena. She held Estrella's hand tightly. The two spoke outside their home a few days before the wedding. Valbuena was taking a break from sewing her daughter's wedding dress. No progress has been made in reducing the number of child marriages in Mexico for the last 30 years, the United Nations Children's Fund reports. This is the case across Latin America and the Caribbean area. The international coalition, Girls Not Brides, says the area is the only one in the world where early unions are increasing overall. UNICEF says girls with limited education who come from low-income households in poor rural areas are more likely to marry at an early age. Research suggests that halting early marriage can raise living standards for girls and their families and improve a nation's economy.
In early June, Mexico's government announced a ban on marriage before the age of 18. The new rule affects many state laws that permit marriage with parental permission for males as young as 16 and girls as young as 14. Mexico joins most other Latin American countries in setting 18 as the age of lawful marriage, says Girls Not Brides. Some countries, especially in the Caribbean area, have no lowest age established. In Mexico, about one in four girls gets married or lives with a sexual partner by age 18, UNICEF reports. The practice is even more common in rural, native-populated communities, such as Chiapa de Corzo, That is where VOA partner Azteca News found Estrella and Endrin. In such places, almost one-third of girls marries young. Children who live together as partners affect the underage marriage rate in Latin America. In Mexico alone, 80% of early unions are between unmarried people, Girls Not Brides reports. The data came from the Mexican Health and Demographic Research Company, INSAD. It says teenage pregnancy is involved in about half of early unions.
Of girls who get married or are living with a partner in Mexico, only 10% return to school, INSAD says. It notes that household responsibilities or pregnancy often get in the way. Married girls who want to return to their education also may face discrimination, especially if they are pregnant. Eugenia Lopez Uribe is Girls Not Brides' top officer in Latin America. She says schools send pregnant girls a message that, "We don't want you here because you're a bad example to other students." Near Chiapa de Corzo, Estrella has left schoolwork for the study of homemaking. Her mother-in-law has taught her how to make Andrine's breakfast eggs, wash clothes, and clean the house. Andrin takes care of the farm animals and fieldwork. He, too, left school early. Neither Andrin's nor Estrella's parents planned marriage for their children at such a young age. When Andrin told his father about his marriage plans, "He took me behind the house, and he scolded me, and he hit me," the teenager says. Within a few days, his father accepted the idea.
Almost a year into the marriage, Estrella and Andrin say they are happy with their situation. Still, the national government wants to see fewer underage unions. So does the Organization of American States, which has urged its 34 member nations to support the UN goal of ending child marriage. A 2016 OAS meeting on the issue led to advisements for expanding awareness, strengthening data collection, and reforming laws and public policies. But advisements and legal reform are not enough, says Lopez Uribe of Girls Not Brides. She says girls must get expanded access to education and health care. Girls need tools and resources to develop their full potential and worth, she says. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Talking, laughing, joking, these are some of the actions we do while we are with friends and family. In today's report, we explore the grammar behind such actions. Specifically, we will show you how English speakers use verbs and prepositions to describe common actions in social situations.
In earlier Everyday Grammar programs, we explored
phrasal verbs. Phrasal verbs have a verb and a particle, a kind of short word. Phrasal verbs have an idiomatic meaning. In other words, the words together mean something different from what you might expect. Today, we explore verbs and prepositions that appear next to each other in a sentence. Although they may look like phrasal verbs, they do not have an idiomatic meaning. To do this, we will explore what we like to call social verb and preposition combinations. They describe how people express and react to ideas. We will talk about two main groups: social verbs with about and social verbs with to.
Our first group includes the verbs talk, laugh, and joke. In everyday speech, speakers often use these verbs with the preposition about. Here is an example. Imagine a group of young people went out last weekend. One of them reports what took place.
What did you do last weekend?
Oh, we went to a cafe and talked about the drama in Ben's life.
Really? What kind of drama?
Well, Ben sent a bunch of money to some guy saying he was a Nigerian prince. I guess he had never heard of that famous internet scam.
That's crazy. I think Ben should read the news more often.
Yeah, but Ben didn't seem mad. He laughed about the whole situation. He even joked about it, too.
What a positive person.
Here, you heard how speakers might describe an event in the past. You heard the speakers talk about a situation, laugh about a situation, and joke about a situation. Speakers might use these structures when talking about the future as well. In this example, the group Nerd has a song about a time in the future when the singer will be able to look back at an event and laugh about it.
Our next group of social verb and preposition combinations includes talk to and listen to. Talk and listen are verbs. To is a preposition. You can talk to someone and you can listen to someone. For example,
I enjoy talking to my friends and family. She said I was not listening to her.
You can also talk to something and listen to something, as in,
is Joe talking to that tree? Are you listening to that song again?
Popular music gives you many examples of talk to and listen to. Let's listen to an example. The famous American singer Frank Sinatra sang the following words.
Talk to me, talk to me, talk to me. Your magical kiss can take me just so far.
Rock group Evanescence gives you an example of how you listen to something.
Now that you have heard examples and explanations of common social verb and preposition combinations, try to practice using them yourself. Be sure to look for examples of them when you watch American television shows or listen to music. In future Everyday Grammar stories, we will talk about more fun grammar topics. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Today, on our national parks journey, we head to the southeastern state of Kentucky. Here, you will find rolling hills and thick green forests. But beneath the land is a strange and silent underground world. One early explorer described it as grand, gloomy, and peculiar. Welcome to Mammoth Cave National Park.
Mammoth Cave is the longest known cave system in the world. It is 2 times as large as the world's second biggest cave system. Its size helped give it its name. Mammoth, as an adjective, means extremely large. Mammoth Cave National Park is in Kentucky's Green River Valley. The park covers over 20,000 hectares. It protects the river valley and hilly land, as well as the vast underground cave system. The U.S. Congress formed Mammoth Cave National Park in 1941. 40 years later, it was named a World Heritage Site. And in 1990, it became a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve Site. Researchers and explorers have mapped more than 600 kilometers of passageways in Mammoth Cave, and scientists continue to explore it.
Water formed the cave over millions of years. Other than the Green River, few sources of water exist above ground. That is because water seeps quickly into the earth. Soil made of broken down limestone absorbs the water. This has created a vast and complex system of chambers and passageways. A delicate and unique ecosystem exists inside the cave. More than 100 kinds of animals live in Mammoth Cave. Some of them live their whole lives in total darkness. Cave shrimp and many other kinds of eyeless, colorless species can be found. Mammoth Cave was once home to about 10 million bats. They included species like Indiana bats, big brown bats, little brown bats, and the eastern small-footed bat. Now they number in the thousands.
Humans first entered Mammoth Cave about 4,000 years ago. They discovered uses for minerals inside the cave. Researchers describe them as primitive miners. Humans explored Mammoth Cave for nearly 2,000 years. Then their exploration appears to have ended. The caves would not be explored again until the end of the 1700s. Many stories name John Houchins for rediscovering the cave. They say he was hunting in the area when he came upon a black bear. The bear was close to the entrance of the cave. Houchins shot the bear, but he failed to kill it.
The bear ran, and Houchins followed. It led him into the cave. Experts do not agree on the exact year of Houchins' discovery, and some people question the story entirely. Slaves played many important roles at Mammoth Cave during the 1800s. During the War of 1812, slaves mined the cave for a mineral called saltpeter. It was used to produce ammunition used during battle. And in 1816, slaves began guiding visitors on cave tours. At the time, the cave was still privately owned.
One of the greatest early explorers of the cave was a slave named Stephen Bishop. He arrived at Mammoth Cave in 1838 when he was a teenager. He learned the tour paths from white guides. But Bishop wanted to push beyond the cave's toured areas. He set off to explore parts of the cave no human had ever seen. Bishop and a companion sought to cross an area called the Bottomless Pit. Its unknown darkness had stopped people from trying to go beyond it. But fear and darkness did not stop Bishop. The areas he discovered beyond Bottomless Pit are still open to visitors today. Bishop started naming different areas of the cave that he discovered: Fat Man's Misery, Cleveland Avenue, and Mammoth Dome, among others. He was also the first to discover a river running through the cave. Bishop created a map of Mammoth Cave in the early 1840s. It included 16 kilometers of passageways. Most of the passages had been discovered or explored by Bishop himself. His map remained in use for more than 40 years. Bishop gained his freedom in 1856, but he died the next year at the age of 37. His grave lies within Mammoth Cave National Park. It was Bishop who described Mammoth Cave as grand, gloomy, and peculiar.
For national park visitors who venture into the cave today, Bishop's description remains true. About 500,000 people tour the cave each year. They are among more than 2 million visitors to the park itself. Mammoth Cave National Park offers campsites for those who want to sleep under the stars. There is also a hotel in the park. And there are plenty of activities outside of the cave. People ride horses on the more than 100 kilometers of park trails. They also fish and boat in the park's rivers. But the main draw of Mammoth Cave National Park remains the dark mystery of an underground world with so much more to discover. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.